we begin at the very top of your head.
The green of calm.
The fence of calm.
The house of calm. The room of calm. The muscle of calm. The walk of calm. The tree of calm. The lips of calm. The river of calm. The cliff of calm. The chest of calm. The corona. The rock of calm. Ink of calm. The bridge. The sheet of calm, the fire of calm, the soil of calm, the vein of calm, the chest of calm, the heart of calm, the muscle of calm, the moon of calm, the sun of calm, the Virgo of calm, the horror of calm, the fantasy of calm, the book of calm, the soul of calm, the heavy of calm.
While your unconscious mind continues with relaxing,
the calm is unconscious, the calm is inside. The calm is blowing. The calm is enclosing. The calm is pacing. The calm is extending. The calm is streaming. The calm is collapsing. The calm is sunning. The calm is disinfecting. The calm is grounding. The calm is paving. The calm is burrowing. The calm is sorting. The calm is eclipsing. The calm is relaxing.
While your unconscious mind pays attention to the sound of my voice.
While the unconscious mind pays attention to the sound of my voice, I spend my days listening to humans talking about transforming what it means to be human, without anxiety, without triggers, without insomnia, without dread, a dull kind of crying, waterless, paced, no ambition, no hope, no attachment to anything that passes the time and anyone I might want to love. When your mind expands, it would be easier to be human on top of a mountain, alone with the goats who roam satisfied, eating the bark from the alpine pines, just me and the smoke of my little fire, speck to the satellite, microbe to the pandemic. Sure what it means to feel this human thing is some kind of drive in divine consciousness, as if that were anywhere to park.
The anchor is just pleasurably and pleasantly hovering.
Pleasurably, pleasantly, here we are all, anyway, birthed from the goddess's thigh and then swallowed whole, incubating in her bile, sailing through space.
As you can feel a wave of calm coming over every muscle in your body.
The wave of calm. Higher self, unique self, disorderly self, child self, swallowed self, ordinary self, aesthetic self, changed self, evil self, enshrined self, conflicted self.
Just floating in the ocean.
semblance of the senses, play of the senses, dissolution of the senses, eruption of the senses, explosion of the senses, drunkenness of the senses, obliteration of the senses, monstrosity of the senses. Cytokine storm, elderberry storm, immune system storm, sublime beautiful storm, river storm, struggle between two souls storm, blasphemous obsession storm, subconscious storm. Room of instruments, music plays itself. Wind blows vibrations. Every note unpacked finds ultimate purpose, infinity of strings. The soul in order has no purpose, only moments, where the spirit wars with the flesh. When the spirit wars with the flesh, you fall out of alignment. Feel the rage and the rebel. Lie weeping on the ground.
The feeling of calm that often you might experience is a feeling of warmth.
Experiencing of power or wave, a current, a ride, a garden, a mystery, a fairy land.
The feeling of calm that you can make the suggestion with your mind.
You can make the suggestion. You wait in line for a wild ride, only to find it end so soon. And the line for the next one is twice as long, etc. You wait in line for a wild ride. Again and again, you wait in line for a wild ride, only to find it end so soon. And the line for the next one is twice as long, etc. You find yourself waiting in line for a wild ride, only to find it end so soon. 2 seconds later, you're back again in line waiting. Again, repeat. Repeat.
Isn't it an amazing feeling?
Repeat.
To know what it feels like to be in control of calm.
Isn't it amazing what it feels like now to control until now for a moment you live, irrelevant to that perplexity? Washed, sitting, straight, cleaned up, devoid of clutter. You move from your body into the trance that connects you to what some call angels. Alien unreality, loving confidence, healthy-minded, controlling energies, calm smile extended over your face, for the thunder is gone beyond you. What you have called the hinder part is smaller and smaller, hard to see, now in the distance, a dot in the sky. You are in control. Can I stay here forever? They asked. Loosed from strings, now floating, untethered mind, they said. That's not what's happening, not the new normal, not the new center of personal energy, subconsciously incubated as affections of the tempest, iron, come back to the planet. Don't let it go, hands off, let it burst forth unaided, open into flower as... The waves of thought we follow are the ones we carry to open into flower. Into flower we carry the waves to open thought. Into thought we follow the waves to open into flower.
Just so that you can come into this feeling.
Until flower rubs up against thoughts of continuous suffering. Incredible, bounteous, squashed. Everything floats before your eyes but leaves no impression until flower moves into negative space. When it could open to a better life, a life not correlated with death. With whom do I want to spend my nights? A health not liable to illness, with whom do I want to disappear?
Feel each of your fingers.
A goodwill that will not perish. With whom do I want to go into trance?
You can be curious about which of your hands is ready to let you know that it's okay for you to completely and totally surrender into
your hands. It's completely okay to know.
So which of your hands is feeling a little bit warmer?
Which of your hands is feeling a little bit warmer? Dropping down, tracks in the distance, tracks in the foreground, tracks in the background. Did I tell you that I live next door to a firehouse? And I am right now sitting outside. In this moment, I am the composition. You are the composition. The trucks are the composition. The fireman is the composition.
That arm is suspended in the air.
We all seem to flow from the sense of the divide that transcends psychology.
You can just let it be dangling there.
Just let it be.
You can feel completely and totally calm.
You can feel completely and totally that there's nothing else to say. An omnipresent, universal consciousness. Acknowledging your limits in essence beyond your limits.
Let you know how you're in control.
Are you alone?
You can establish calm when you need to be calm.
Are you arguing?
You can easily access this calm.
Are you interrupted?
To grow like a flow over your entire body.
Are you flowing?
The tips of your toes to the tips of your fingers.
Are you divorcing? Are you sleeping? Are you anxious? Are you beeping? Are you masked? Are you seeking the truth? Are you listening to the radio? Are you living lies? Are you sick? Are you escaping? Are you foraging? Are you breathing? Are you in love? Are you vulnerable? Are you revving? Are you sleeping? Are you beginning? Are you watching? Are you bored? Are you listening?
Greetings, comrades. You are in tune to Poet Radio on WGXC. My name is Chris, and we began the show this evening with a piece, kind of a collaboration of between one person and themselves. My guest is Kristen Prevale, and I'm with Kristen via FaceTime, but also her voice is in my software, and there's all kinds of space in between us, and I could clearly hear the birds and trucks in the background there, Kristen. It's a beautiful piece, and I think it would have been nice to actually do that for like an hour. The whole show today was just that, and it was, you know, so beautiful, like a meditation of sorts, right? And I know we'll be talking about, I'm sure, your work with the trans poetics, but it, you know, there's nothing like getting a sense of what that is and actually being exposed to it. So it was really great to hear it a couple of weeks ago when I heard you do it on the online reading, and even, you know, the second time around, it's a beautiful effect. It sounds so good.
Oh man, thank you.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about it in a second, but let me finish introducing you to the radio and podcast audience. And for those of you who don't know Kristen, she's a poet, an essayist, a teacher. Her work, I saw a Wikipedia page for Kristen Prevolet today, talks about your how you incorporate conceptual writing and trance, and your performances are rooted in feminist performance art and spoken word. I know you've published a number of books, including Trans Poetics and Everywhere Here and in Brooklyn, and you edited the Helen Adam Reader, and let's not forget you co-edited the journal Apex of the M way back. And Chris and I have known each other since 1990, so we do go back a ways, and we began to connect where we had sort of an connection between our interests. When she was at SUNY Buffalo and I was at Albany, we both had interests beyond poetry in video art and media, multimedia work. So, and it's just, managed to stay connected from there. Now, Kristen is teaching. She teaches at Bard College, and she's been for many years, I don't know how many actually, been teaching in the prisons in New York. How long have you been working, doing workshops in the prisons?
Well, that's the Bard College, what I do for Bard. Bard is in, I think, 7 or 8 prisons in upstate New York, and are really moving that program all around the country, from what I understand. I've been with them for maybe 4 years, I believe.
That's great. And then you do a summer teaching program at Bard as well.
The summer teaching, right.
Can we talk about the piece that we started the show with? What's the title? Does it have a title?
Well, I think the title is just the first line, which is The Green of Calm.
The Green of Calm. Talk about the music. I don't know what the background is on the soundtrack there.
So there's multiple layers to the piece. There's 3 different musical soundtracks that I overlaid on top of each other. One is just a fragment of a piece that I did in collaboration with Ambrose Bai. When I very, very, very first started doing hypnotherapy, and I wanted to make some recordings, and Ambrose and I did a couple of collaborations, and he did a couple of beautiful soundscapes. And he gave me permission to take a fragment from one of his soundscapes and use it for my recordings. So I did that. So I have that. And then I have also layered on top of that another soundscape that a friend of mine named Stephen Brent. He is a real experimental sound artist. And he did that piece for me with his guitar. He wanted to experiment with whether or not the guitar could be guitar could be used for the purposes of trance music. You know, it's not a traditional instrument that's often used for trance, so he wanted to experiment with that, and I think he did a beautiful piece. So I have that piece, and then overlaid with that I have another piece, which is a simple recording of the Aurora Borealis. I have an old friend who has an instrument in his basement that he points to the center of the Aurora Borealis in order to record any pings that may appear. And so I asked him if I could use his pings. So the soundscape for that is layered with those 3 ambient tracks. And then the piece that I'm reading from that is just a kind of hypnosis piece called The Control of Calm. So many people come. When a person is seeking out hypnosis, often it's really because they want
to learn to relax in a different kind of way. So I made that recording actually for a client, but then I realized that it's kind of a general recording. So I wanted to kind of play with it a little bit. So I layered it onto the tracks, and then I wanted this poem, which is a poem that lays multiple tracks. One is William James over some other kinds of writing of mine. So sort of a layering of tracks there as well. So that's what that piece is.
The whole thing with the layering is beautiful and handled very nicely, but this idea that you're getting the Aurora Borealis in there as well. That's interesting, is because some of it is one of those layers has this kind of distorted quality to it, like a transmission staticky type thing. Okay, good. Because there was you'll hear it when you hear the recording, but as I was monitoring it, I could tell that there was some distortion happening to your voice. At the very beginning, the word calm kept getting clipped. But it did, that stopped happening. But then I noticed towards the end, another quality happened to your voice, which is like where it was getting this like second layer of your voice in a staticky realm, like kind of in the aesthetic of that Aurora Borealis. So it's cool.
That's awesome.
Well, let's hope that it sounds awesome when we play it back, but all sorts of things. You're on an iPad, you're outside, I'm in a studio, and you know, there's, 60 miles or so between us, so it's bound to have a...
Distortion.
It won't be high fidelity, but maybe in the future...
It's a composition.
Yeah, and it's meant to be different every time. I mean, one day maybe you'll get into a recording studio and make the, that as a perfect, track, but in the meantime, we're all doing the best we can to get stuff out there, even if it's... rudimentary. I mean, it's not rudimentary, but still, like, the technology here is like wires all over the place. And I notice you're not using your phone attachment. When I saw you last on the internet speaking, you had a telephone microphone, but today more casual, less busy.
No, it's simply because the phone goes into my computer, but not into this iPad, which doesn't have that kind of a connector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, right? USB, like a USB
connector.
Otherwise,
I would have done that.
So that piece, the Green of Calm, has come about since the pandemic?
Well, it's more like I work very much in with material, so I don't usually sit down and write. And except unless I'm writing just materially. So this was just a going back and merging together, kind of smoothing together some language. So if the pandemic was in the larger field of my awareness, certainly, but really it was just what language needs to coalesce into this moment. So I went into notebooks to find that language and then kind of smoothed that together with a little bit of William James. So it was more like I'm working kind of with fields, with the field in that sense. I guess what Olson used to call field composition.
Right.
Just composed into the field.
A bit of a collage, which is another technique you've certainly worked with before.
A collage for sure, yeah.
Uh-huh. I mean, right from the very beginning of your publishing career with the... study of Max Ernst's 100 Headless Women. I mean, those are such great collages. So you were interested in those collages, but it also has become part of what you do as a writer. I mean, not every time out, but.
Yeah, that's right. We knew each other during that those days. Yeah. You know, the collage really, I think, defined, once I figured out about collage as a medium and as a practice, I was never the same kind of writer.
Well, once you maybe had permission or noticed that other people were, there's precedent for it.
Yeah, or just that idea that, you don't have to sit down and write some kind of perfect poem or some kind of, that the writing doesn't come from some sort of like thunderbolt that hits you across the head and therefore, and then kind of channels this perfect piece. It's more that you have all of the materials in front of you and you make you make the art out of what you have available. It just takes the pressure away from of some sort of divine intervention, I suppose.
Or even personal subjectivity, right?
Right.
I mean, you move away from that. I think I know many people, myself included, who feel similar to that. I'm willing to surrender, you know, authorial to control to an idea rather than something personal, some personal feeling. Of course, it all comes from the personal. You're the one gathering all these things. You're the one mixing them up. So it's as of what, like, as of a certain point in the, probably in the 20th century, it became very difficult for, you know, to be like an individual, like soul genius. And I, when I think of writers like Pound and Olson, you know, they were beginning to see how in the like post-atomic or, you know, whatever you want to call it era. Yeah, there are going to be great poets who just sit down and write poems and that's how they do it. And we love some of them. But certainly, certainly not everybody's wired, so to speak, to do that. I mean, I can think of poets I know who are writing who brilliantly write in a very unique style that's all their own.
Absolutely.
But that's not...
God bless them.
That's not the majority at this point, right? I mean, a lot of people are using the internet especially to do it. I mean, as of the, you know, like the Flarf year or the post-Flarf year, that's, we get lots of that. Even your, I think your Poetry Foundation type writers are building those types of tools or approaches into composition.
Yeah, well, that is composition. And so it's really, I think that anyone, actually, it's sort of a ruse, isn't it? I mean, no one actually sits down and just writes a poem out of some kind of clear connection to the art of poetry. It's always filtered through a wide variety of materials and lenses and voices, and there's nothing pure about it. It's just the illusion of purity. So I feel like to me it's just the collage element is just lays bare the actual kind of mechanism behind it. There's no pure artist in that sense of being a pure vessel. We're all very, very, you know, polluted, tainted by such wide varieties of fluctuations within our experience, within our, what we're gathering, within what we know, within the voices in our head, within the traumas that we've incurred, within our responses to the world. All of that is really, my favorite word is really coalesce. It all coalesces into the moment.
Well, it's like we are layered just like your pieces are layered, right? I mean, the pieces are reflections of, you know, the types of layering. Some of them are traumatic. Some of them are ecstatic. Some of them are, you know, all this different. Some are just information. And,
right.
And your muse sneaks through in between there somehow. Let's talk about the work with the sound. Because that's really interesting to me, of course. Like, you're, you know, I have the soundtrack here, you're listening to it, you're responding to it. Now, has that come about, and it has this great effect, right? Because it's like echoic, and there's all this other stuff. I'm hearing things, and it reverberates later on, you know, and then you have this couple of sections in there where it's, you know, it's like a chant, almost calm, 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 you know, that is the sound. This, do you have more works like this? Have you been doing more of these types of productions?
I think that mostly I've been doing them as collaboration with like soundscape artists, like my friend Steven. So I just became very, very involved with music through my hypnosis practice because I was making recordings for people. So I was layering sound underneath my voice. And then I just started playing around with the idea that I could bring poetry to that realm, which is and part of the thing about this piece, which is a little bit tongue in cheek, is I have a little bit of embarrassment actually about the hypnosis recordings. You know, I think anybody who traverses in that realm puts oneself to a little bit of risk from a lot of naysayers. There's a lot to be sort of made fun of in that realm of making recordings for people, and the sort of softness of the voice and the suggestions and all of that.
I mean, so like new age criticism?
Yeah, the kind
like...
of new age sort of thing is a little bit mocked in my avant-garde tradition. So I'm very much a divided person. I have this kind of weird sort of, you know, these practices that are based on these more esoteric new age philosophies. And then I also am very committed to avant-garde practice. Trying to bring those two things together is awkward.
Yeah, I suppose. I find myself listening, you know, partially as an influence of the people who are around me and my friends, listening more to like tonal music rather than, you know, or what might be seen as some as new age music, just because I'm, you know, I am getting older and, you know, I don't need the edge. Sometimes that stuff is really interesting, right? And what you're doing with it, which is at least partly professional, of course you have to use the techniques that work. I mean, I don't know a lot about hypnosis myself, but of course I can understand how sound plays a role in that, and how sound and using the voice on top of the sound has this, I don't mean manipulative in a bad way, but it has a way of guiding, right? I mean, I've done enough meditations to, you know, and listened to enough even poetry that is, you know, that does stuff, does that similar effect, depending on how the voice is used and what the content is. I mean, it may not be my favorite poetry, but it's out there, you know, so I think it's...
Absolutely, absolutely.
To me, it's interesting, and I knew a poet in Northern California, now back in the late 80s, and she also used a similar technique, and I always loved it, right? And yeah, okay, the, you know, hardcore poets of the time, we would have nothing to do with that type of approach, but I rather liked it. And even, you know, thinking of the work of Joanne Kiger, she played with this a bit. I mean, this sort of, and I know she did some recordings.
Oh, she did.
With,
she's a huge influence.
Right. And then it was more, I'm not using the term disparagingly, new agey about that combination. Maybe not in a solo reading, but when sounds became involved, I loved it, you know. I think she did.
Yeah, me too.
And it was, she did some recordings with Arthur Okamura, I think his name was, and they were just beautiful, you know, and they were, you know what they were doing? They were hanging out in Bolinas, having a good time.
Exactly, making music and making poetry and putting it together.
Yeah, so I think it's a good tradition to be involved with, and, you know, if I were you, yeah. I would not be concerning myself with the hard-bitten, you know, crowd at... name the venue really cares for it or not, you know, it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
I agree. It's effective, you know, to me it's effective aesthetically, even in the context of, say, the body and language reading where I first heard it a couple of weeks ago, right? I mean, I think it was very compelling. I don't know, did you hear the recordings of it? Were you happy with how that turned out?
Yeah, for sure.
Great.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think like you said, it's like every single time I do it, it'll be slightly different. And so, and that time was fine. I think it serves the moment.
All right, Kristen. Great. I'm much enjoying the conversation and, talking about this piece, but maybe we should, you have some more poems you like to put out on the airwaves?
Sure, I can read a little bit of a different poem.
All right, great. Let me remind the listeners that they're in tune to Poet Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM in Hudson. Guest this month, which is May 2020, is Kristen Prevale. Let's hear what you got, Kristen.
Well, right, just like we were talking about, you know, part of it, this idea of this kind of new age language. And it is a language, you know, it is a language and a syntax and a vocabulary. So as a poet, I like to sort of play around with that vocabulary. So this is a poem called Accumulating Abundance. 1 trillion divided in half, but not exactly in half, is a tenth of a billion or 20 extra zeros, rounded up, because that's what happens in the cloud. It attracts ions, electricity, and other invisible things, and it turns them into rain, like magic numbers. If you roll a dice and it is 17, you will have powers to make this room disappear, leaving behind only 4 gold coins. This means that you will survive the impending global economic collapse. In your bank account, any number greater than the square root of 50 means your perceived self-worth is a fraction of your total value. Don't stress about it. This was determined when you were born, and your soul was split into 7 pieces, each an eternity of past lives, all coalescing into your number guides. So divide the GDP of the Soviet Union by 10 and subtract the day, hour, and year of your birth. This will provide you with protection. After all, the Cold War never really ended, and the Russians have been lurking in the shadows all along. Speaking of covert, 2 oranges and a bunch of grapes do not make a good vintage, but 10 orange pills in a hair dye can make a dinner party, especially one with a president, fall apart quicker than meat simmered and basted for 3 hours. You know, that kind of meat. Lucky for you, no matter what number you attract into your life, if you place it squarely between your third eye and the base of your spine, it will be the right number. Transformation is bound to happen because you are the sacred permutation, one that takes every star out of the moment of its explosion and finds in your heart an infinity of zeros, that most perfect coalescence, unregulated love.
You have a nice accompanist there in your backyard. So accumulating abundance, this is...
So that's a little bit of an ironic poem, to playing around with that language.
Yeah, well, you're hearkening back to a previous era with a Soviet Union reference in there.
Previous era? What are you talking about? Before Corona, it was all about the Russians.
That's true. But when I hear Soviet Union, you know, I definitely think of like pre-1990.
Right.
Well, I probably shouldn't. That's probably false thinking on my part, right? But I've been studying a little bit over the past few years Russian history. I went to Russia and stuff, so it definitely, to me, there's a... But you know, it's the same old thing, right? Like you're saying, the Cold War never really ended. You know, that's a completely legitimate observation, as far as I'm concerned.
The Cold War as a thought wave.
As a thought wave, and you know, the fact that the Russian culture. I mean, they're not attached to their history as being a permanent thing, right? There's like 4 different eras all in the early part of the 20th century and in the late 19th century. This idea that like 1989 or whatever is only like, it's like a drop in the bucket. You know, Putin could be, he'd just been waiting in the wings to, you know, to win the Cold War, right? I mean, that's what you're getting at. Right.
Right. And I mean, it's just the, you know, the Russians and the interfering in the election and the Russians, you know, killing spies from these crazy, you know, these crazy poisons in the middle of public squares and the Russians and
shooting down, shooting down planes.
It's just amazing. It's a wave of we have to have an enemy all the time.
Well, that's true. But also this,
and my question now is, what happened to the Russians? Just because, you know, COVID-19 comes, suddenly there's no more Russians? I don't understand. It was like, it's all we heard about for like the past 2 years. It's all that was in the news. It's just a question.
Well, they're suffering as well, I think.
I know.
For sure.
But amazing how the coverage just dropped.
Yeah, well, the media's, who knows what's on their minds. But this idea that, you know, if we think back to our own culture in the 80s, I mean, what was happening then has only been amplified and inflated since then. So, of course, Russia, you know, it's relative and kind of parallel in a way. I mean, I'm thinking that you know, this stuff that we, this mess that we're in now with the current administration, pandemic aside, is really just kind of grown out of, you know, Reagan's, you know, policies, and, you know, is just as dastardly in my point of view. So yeah, the abundance, even in the pandemic, there are people accumulating abundance, you know, I mean,
oh, it's gosh, like, are you kidding?
The problems, yes. The problems with capital persist. Right.
Yes, and that's what the poem is about. The poem is about the accumulation of capital. And ultimately, it's about how the accumulation of capital is a mythology. It's a story that gets told.
Right on. Right on. Sure, I get it. It's good to be having these things said and broadcast. Is that, and it's a recent piece, right? Somewhat recent?
Somewhat recent. It wasn't written. It's not a pandemic piece per se.
Right.
Just happened to find it here and thought, haven't read that one out loud. Let's try it.
The I mean, your interest in performance and spoken word must. I mean, what are we going to do? Are we going to just be on Zoom readings for the next, you know, however long? I mean, I miss it. I can say for sure. I miss seeing music on stage, on poetry on stage. What does a performance artist do? Just get used to the new idiom and stay in the new stage.
I think in the short term, the artists, you know, yourself included, who are working experimentally with Zoom, with those, you know, has that feature where you can change your background, and I think that artists are doing really interesting things with that right now. But yeah, it's going to get a little old pretty quickly, I would think, and we're gonna be, but you know, I was walking in a park yesterday, and there was a couple of musicians who were sitting there making music, and I feel like the musicians are going to just kind of appear. It'll be like you're wandering around and suddenly you're just gonna hear music,
yeah,
everywhere, because well, and that'll be kind of a sort of lovely thing to have happen. And my concern with the public spaces is that if public spaces now can only accommodate 10, 15, 20 people at a time, that means that their ticket prices are going to have to be tripled, which means that really the rest of us who can't afford high ticket prices are going to be relegated to listening to Zoom into the uncertain future.
Or UbuWeb or Penn Sound or whatever symphony is,
yeah,
letting their... Well, yesterday, my band played in my bandmate's driveway. We're doing it every other Sunday, so I think you're right.
That was for you, of course, for your own sanity, but also I'm sure, you know, then your neighbors have this moment of sound, you know.
Well, people stop by.
Yeah, people will stop by. I think that's kind of interesting.
The other thing I saw, I wish I was paying a little bit more attention to it, but just this morning I saw an article, it may have been London, it may have been Berlin, where they're having 10-minute concerts, one-on-one, like with a musician and a audience of one in a large space. And apparently it's a very moving experience, especially if you haven't had live music in, you know, a few weeks or whatever. So,
oh, wow.
There may be like these situations you talk about where a third of the number of people can go, but the whole idea of performances might become more intimate in a way between audience and performer. I don't know. We're all making it up, right? Just as
well, there is a track for that. You know, there was Macbeth, I remember, was done by a theater production company in a house where every single room had a different scene going on, and you would go from room to room in order to piece together the play. That's an interesting model.
Sure.
And the poetry readings, the poetry brothel model, where you would have you'd have a private poetry reading.
Oh yeah.
That was kind of an interesting model that could be brought back.
I never experienced that. I know they actually had it in Kingston. They were having them in Kingston a few years ago.
Yeah, I think that should come back.
everybody can wear masks and gloves and
yeah.
You know, I'm willing to give it a shot. Sure. Well, I have been enjoying I've been attending the body and language or whatever lingo language sessions that Edwin Torres has been putting together. And yeah, it's been in a way uplifting. That first week after it had already been a couple of months without it, seeing you read and seeing several other people who I admire read, and Edwin's just kind of curatorial, you know, acumen in the way that he's putting things together and having performances on one screen and then the readings on another screen. You can go back and forth. Beautifully inventive, you know. And
getting better. I think every one got better. And now he's putting them all up on YouTube. So if you missed it, you can go back and see what we're talking about.
That's right. He had to change the name because YouTube was complaining about body being in the title. So I think it's Lingo Language, but
I'll
have to check that. Yeah, Amy was saying that she wished that it would go on every week. You know, she is obviously interested she's a great reader and interested in things that I do, but she's not even, you know, doesn't go out to the poetry readings all the time, but it was just like something thoughtful, something uber creative. And
absolutely different language than, you know, Rachel Maddow. Listening to these narratives over and over and over again about, and so you hear poetry language and it just, I had a friend who's a doctor who come to that reading of mine. And afterwards he said, it was so nice just to enter into other people's headspace.
Yeah, right.
And you know, when you're not in, you know, we as artists are used to wandering in and out of each other's headspace. That's what we do as artists. We wander in and out of headspaces and mind spaces and body spaces all the time. Willingly, we go into a gallery and, you know, set foot in another world and really give that world permission to kind of wash over us. But if you're not a reader, if you're not an artist, you're a doctor and your day is basically just taking care of people in this really, really extreme circumstance.
Right.
He said it was just incredible to be in another mind space. And that's why I, you know, really think that language, you know, it's not a new idea, but I think that my interest in hypnosis is because language is medicine. Language is a medicine. Poetry is a kind of medicine.
Right, right.
So, I think that that Edwin's reading series really is bringing that to a really wide range of people. There's like 90 people showing up at those readings. 300 people RSVP'd. You know, I mean, it's not just poets and artists who are showing up. I think that's amazing.
Well, absolutely. And not to be critical about poetry readings in general, but one of the things I like about it is the 10-minute slot, too. Like having that whole reading happen in less than an hour, four writers.
Yeah.
And then hanging out for discussion afterwards if you want. But just that being direct and to the point, efficient, you know, or online, I'm sure we all have this experience of being online half of your life now, you know, so it better be good. Don't waste my time being online with a reading going on and on, or else there's the rest of the world we can, you know, attend to, you know, at least if we're lucky. So we'll see what happens, right? I mean, I think it's worth sticking around to see what happens. I mean,
I think we got to stick around. You know, we got to stick around. It's difficult. It's going to be a difficult ride. It's not going to, you know, things aren't really going to return to some, you know, magic number of normalcy or whatever. But, you know, we got to stick it out.
Well, just to see what happens. And, you know, for our kids' sake, too, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure.
People to care for. Well, it's nice to hear your poems, and if you have, you know, we've done a lot of talking. If you have some, more poems to read that you feel like you haven't aired in a while, please. Let's.
I'll
we have about 10 minutes left in the program. So.
Oh, okay. Well, here's just a new one. This one is a weird. This is a Corona poem. I, at the very beginning of this whole thing, at the beginning of the furlough, kept on waking up at the magic hour of 3 a.m. For like two weeks, I would wake up at 3 a.m. and I would force myself to get up and do something, to write or go outside or move or, you know, do a dance move of some kind. So this is a poem that came from one of my 3 a.m. escapades. If, but it wasn't that I put it all into a house. House with one roof and too many walls. House of walls that smoked through sockets of electricity. That when waking spoke loneliness, the way some people say good morning. Eggs happen frequently, but with stew left over from Thanksgiving, what kind of space is that to bring a child into? Learning butchery, the way some people learn art or war. Like it or not, the house thought me to the outside, and then the singing happened. The way some people need music in the shower, I needed the spoken, what was not said, the family, the secrets. The house had many walls, but no whispers. The way some people cry into pillows. So that's that poem.
Just waking up in the middle of the night and jotting a poem out? Or 3 a.m.,
the magic hour.
But is it from notes and you write it later, or you just sat
down? No, that one was one that just wrote itself.
All right.
So we come full circle in this hour, right? I start with talking about the collage and layering and end with, sometimes poems do just write themselves into existence. You just have, you know, you open yourself to the flow, and you just let what happens happen. That's why I actually have my Transpoetics now as an online course, Chris. I don't know if I sent you that email, but it's for that purpose, just to get people into that mind of just a sort of flexibility around this whole thing.
You know,
so I'm very excited about that course. I think it's really, I think it's actually providing a really nice interlude for people to enter into during this time. And it's just an ongoing course. You can drop in, drop out whenever you want. It's just, you know.
You want to say just a little bit more about it? I mean, we have time. I think those who are, right now it's online, but was it ever a course that you met and get, you know, gathered or?
It is basically over the past 10 years that I've been doing this kind of work around Transpoetics. I've given lectures and workshops in a wide variety of places, and I have always often recorded those workshops. So it's basically, I put together a curriculum. So I've got like 8 recordings and, you know, 4 different portals and a bunch of writing prompts and little mini lectures. And they're just all organized onto this online course called Transpoetics, Body Mind Writing. And so it's just, for people who are maybe feeling a little bit stuck, feeling like they're working on a project, but finding it difficult to find the energy or the motivation, finding that the field is, you know, it's a difficult field emotionally to navigate. I think we're in for a long, lonely summer. So it's just a way of connecting with people. And then once a month I have a online community kind of session where we write together, listen to a kind of a brief teaching, and then I field questions and people can share their writing. So it's cool.
It sounds great.
I'm excited about it. Yeah.
And you know, it's interesting. You've been doing this for a decade now, but how did it like come into being? Like, what was it? I mean, when I knew you, say when we were both in Boulder, you weren't really like a Naropa type, that type of clinical Buddhist type approach to as part of your artwork. I mean, you know, so where, say 20 years after that, where does it come from? I mean, you were living in the city. What was that? What was the thing that turned you into this direct, turned you towards this direction?
You know, to be honest with you, in a nutshell, I would say two parents who both died because of a kind of medical negligence, a divorce, a kind of a displacement, and all of that kind of swirling around in the kind of personal sphere.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of difficulty in those years, in other words. And so, and also just not really ever landed. I never quite landed. I was, as a poet, I was always a little bit too, you know, I mean, interested in a few too many ways of bringing sound and art and all this other stuff into the field of poetry, like you. That's why we've been friends for so long, because we connect like that at that level.
That's really interesting.
I never really landed like an academic job as a quote unquote poet, and it just didn't work out for me that way. So, and it was too late for me to go and get a medical degree or to go and get a degree in psychoanalysis or something. I had a child and a household that I had to kind of maintain. So I found that hypnosis was a way for me to bridge language, my love of language and my skill set with language,
right,
into a healing modality that actually was practical and useful and was able to support me.
No, it's great. It's
not
great.
In some kind of way that I'm making, you know, a ton of money or something. It's just that it's a way of being supported in the world when you have this very odd skill.
Well, it's beautiful. And, congratulations on that. I didn't mean to put you on the spot there. It was like,
I hadn't thought about that question. So thank you.
But I hadn't really thought about the question. I mean, everybody kind of moves along and evolves and grows and what have you. But then, you know, some things are kept more quiet, like my own contemplative practices. I try not to like make, you know, announce them all, but we move on. Move through different phases, and you know, some things stick, some things don't stick. And you know, hearing that, I mean, I think one thing that's happened is hearing you read, even online, has exposed me to new dimensions of what you're doing. And so I appreciate knowing more about them and even knowing them. So hooray.
Yeah. Oh, well, I appreciate the opportunity. It's always nice to speak from the heart like this.
Great. Well, I think that's about it for the program part of our conversation today. Anyway, it's been a real delight to program with you, Kristen, and you know, I imagine we'll keep seeing each other along the internet and what have you. But wish you well. Thanks for taking time to read your poems and talk about them. It's a beautiful show.
Thank you for the invitation. Really appreciate it.
That's it for this month's program, ladies and gents, comrades, be well.